This week on Extinction Event, invasive Burmese pythons in the Florida Everglades. These massive snakes are slithering extinction machines, and whew, Jack, get ready for this one. It's not for the faint of heart. Some messed up stuff happens.
Let's go.
Okay.
Did you ever feel so bad inside?
Welcome to Extinction Event. Jack, I'm really excited. Before you like interrupt with some stupid thing,
I would never.
I'm excited about this one.
I don't see why, because you are deathly afraid of snakes.
I am.
Seem genuinely pumped.
It wasn't an easy one for me. It took me down some dark paths that I didn't want to go down. I think we talked about this on a past episode. It's one of those where I did a lot of research, but I tried not to look at too many photos. Like, I don't even want to look at a snake.
That must have been so hard for you.
It's not that hard. It's just like a banner ad on the website.
You're very brave.
Thank you. I know what you're going to say.
What?
Burmese pythons and the Everglades are the exact opposite of extinct.
Yeah, that did go through my mind. Like, what are they going? Is that not a problem anymore? Because I thought I heard something about that being a problem. So, and then my mind went, well, they must be making something else go extinct, which would make the title of this episode a bit misleading.
Yeah.
But I know Melissa wouldn't clickbait people into listening to the pod.
I've thought about it. I think I'm going to just say invasive Burmese pythons. The reason I'm doing them is because they are extincting a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a fascinating story. We talk about invasive species happening all the time, but this is one that's happening kind of in real time for us instead of back in the 1800s.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting story. And also, it was in Bill Zellman's book. It was one of the stories in there about the Everglades. And also, there's a Burmese python on the cover of the book.
All right. So it's here and now.
Yeah. It's timely.
You can really get your hands on it, a piece of extinction, if you go down to Florida.
Yeah. You could go there and collect some artifacts that might be worth something one day right now. One of the reasons I'm excited about this episode is, if you recall, over the past week or couple weeks, I've just kept in saying, I got this story I want to tell you, but I can't tell you until we do the record, okay?
Yeah, and usually this would lead to some type of anxiety attack, keeping it in so tight, trying to get it out. So again, your bravery shining through.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
It was a big moment for me. Okay, we've talked about this so many times. You know how they target boomers, that generation, on the internet, whether it be like a chain email or some video,
right?
That goes around and it has all of an older generation just like, did you see that? And it like gets them, right?
Gets them a chatter. Yeah.
Something about it. And it'll be something silly. Like,
do you have a good example?
The one I think of is a while back there was these Starbucks cups. It was a video where
Where they're like, look, venti and tall are the same amount of liquid.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, just like, you could test this yourself in about 10 minutes.
I believe my parents went out and they tested themselves.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is like, whatever, it was funny. We like had a long conversation about it and tried to break apart the video. But why did that video exist? What was the point of it?
I've thought about this a lot, and I think maybe I've talked about it a lot, but I think people want to feel superior to those in charge, right? The government, the people who are out there are like, these idiots are doing, they're a bunch of idiots, and I'm smarter than them. So anytime there's an opportunity to feel like you're smarter, like, or I'm not going to be taken advantage of by the people in power, people love to do it. They jump right in, even if they're being suckered into it. And like directly not making the point they're trying to make, which is I'm smarter than this.
Okay, so it's just like a basic human trait
yeah.
for most of us.
Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That is expressed in different ways across different generations and different right. people. But all right, well, I bring it up because I don't typically fall for stuff like that, but I finally found my version of that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a name for it. I was on TikTok scrolling and there's this crazy video and it's in it looks like an Asian place because mm-hmm. there's like a crowd of people and they're sort of looking. And there's this weird thing in the foreground, and you don't really know what it is. And I finally figure out what I think it is, and that is a python with a human inside of it trying to escape.
Uh-huh.
It's a short video.
And like, everyone's just like, whoa. Everyone's like watching it happen. How are they trying to escape? Are they like...
They were fully inside, and you could see the legs like flailing out. Like,
okay, so the head isn't sticking out,
no.
being like, little help, guys.
No, and the way the video is everything is just a little off, you know? Like,
yeah.
You can't really see the whole snake. The people aren't really looking at that snake,
yeah.
the quote-unquote snake. But it sends me down a hole, because I'm also... researching Burmese pythons at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm aware of it as it's happening. I'm like, this is what happens to my parents. And I had to research if it was possible for that to happen. Like, was this real? And it's completely not real. Like, there's not, I don't know. But here's the thing. Why did they make that video?
Just to get people to click, get those eyeballs.
But I didn't click. It was just coming through my TikTok feed.
Yeah, but that's like, it's attention. If you just pause on it for a while, that's getting recorded. Yeah. That's like, oh, okay. We got this one. You're about to get like so many more. There's I think there's a shark one where they like cut open a shark and
yeah.
something comes out.
But after it happened, I realized I can't even believe I fell for it for 1 second because it was so obviously fake.
You know what? You shouldn't feel bad because you're educating yourself to a new world of disinformation,
okay.
right? We are about to enter a golden age of these videos with AI videos, right? Because you're going to be able right. to just make them.
Yes.
So it's all those little things, like the crowd response. Did it seem like the crowd was watching a guy being eaten by a giant
python? And why was nobody
python?
Helping him? I'm like, yeah. why are you not cutting open the
were
python?
People losing their minds?
No.
Is nobody, it was like, get a knife, get him out of there? Yeah. Nothing? No, everyone's nothing. Just sitting around like, you know, watching a guy bang on some upside down trash cans on the street. There's clues.
It looked like if there was a fabric vinyl mesh that was elastic.
Yeah.
And maybe you had a suit like that or something. Like, that's how stretchy it was.
I've seen similar videos, but it's like they ate like a cow or something. A small cow.
Yeah. Okay. But here's what I found out about it. It's that, and I freaked out because that's like a huge fear of mine. I was like, could this happen to me? Could I get out of the snake if this happened? Here's the thing. That would never, ever happen. It's a constrictor.
Yeah.
And so as it's constricting you, whether it's just like rolling around you or I guess, you know, in combination with its jaws or whatever,
yeah,
it's constricting you so hard, you breathe out, you're not breathing in again.
Right.
It's that much
it's crushing
force.
Your yes. ribs. It's expelling all of your air.
Yeah. So there's no reality. You'd probably be dead before you even were
get eaten.
Swallowed by yeah. that. But even if you weren't, like in my weird worst case scenario, I'm like, well, I'm like halfway in and maybe I can like get in there and then rip out of the snake.
You're thinking you're going to go deeper into the snake. To find a way out.
I don't, maybe.
You're like, there's a hole on one side. There's got to be a hole on the
that's
other.
That's where it's wrapping around you and constricting you. Maybe if I get away from the the thing that's snaking around my body. I don't even want to talk about it, actually. I'm really uncomfortable.
Interesting plan. But yeah.
It wouldn't happen. So you don't have to worry about that happening. You wouldn't be trapped inside of a python.
Unless you're dead.
Yeah. And so then you're not doing a show for the group of people standing.
What if the python thinks you are dead? Like you got sedated. Someone shoots you with some sedation needle.
Boop. See where you're going with that.
And the python, you know, they don't want to fight live prey. They just want to come up and eat. So they come up, they find a sedated you, and then just start. Could that happen? I don't mean to introduce.
No,
a new
I think
fear.
They're still. I think they're still. They're going to constrict you. They're going to make sure. They're not just like, oh, less work for me. They're going to just, by nature, do that.
I bet you the constricting, like, chomps up bones and just makes it more digestible.
That too. Yeah. Crazy. Crazy to go off on that. But I didn't want to talk for that long, but I'm glad I got it out finally. You can see it's been burning a hole inside of me.
Yeah.
Let's get into the actual story. Shall we?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So Bill's book, he talks about the invasive species that are present in the Everglades. The Burmese python is one of those. For listeners who may not be familiar with the Everglades, that is a wetland ecosystem located at the very tip of Florida. Have you been?
No, I've only driven through the panhandle.
Okay. Okay. I have been and I have seen a snake down there.
And you will never forget.
I won't.
It.
You're just like, the Everglades National Park, they have these little walkways over the swamp or the wetlands, if you will. And you're like, oh, isn't it beautiful? And then you look up in a tree that's mere, like an arm's length away from you is just a massive snake.
Was it a python?
I don't know. I just freaked out.
If you close your eyes, can you see it right now?
It could have been a python. Yeah, it really could have. But there's other snakes out there too.
Yeah.
There's literally thousands of non-native species, whether they be insects or other animals, in the Everglades or in Florida. I don't.
This surprises me not at all. Everglades seems like sort of a dumping ground for any type of animal.
Right.
You know, they will be like, they'll be happy here.
Right.
Or
right.
This will take care of that. You know, one way or another, it's like they can all just kind of funnel down to the Everglades.
It's Florida's living dump.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Things just sort of sort themselves out.
I have
there.
Nothing to back this up, but that's what it feels
it
like.
It seems like. That seems normal for down there.
Your kid's got a pet turtle. It's a pain in the ass. Take him to the Everglades.
Little
any
vacation.
Reptile, Everglade.
Right. It seems like they're natural where you'd take them. I understand.
Oh, you bought
that.
A cute little teacup pig. Now he's huge. Take him to the Everglades.
That's exactly what's happening down there. I was going to say, though, that some of them have been introduced intentionally, like for agricultural pest control. And we know how that goes. Never goes well. Doesn't do what you think it's going to do. The point is, it's not just the pet trade getting stuff down there, although that's pretty much what this episode is about. We start noticing the invasive species there in the 16th century when Spanish conquistadors introduced feral hogs.
It's always the feral hogs.
Yeah, it was funny you said those teacups.
Mm-hmm.
Those teacup pigs. Which, yeah, right. Do you think they're surviving down there? Because those were huge for a minute in the 90s. Everybody
those
wanted,
tiny pigs?
Yeah.
I'm going to say no.
No. There's a lot of predators down there.
Yeah.
Okay. In the 1800s, cargo stowaways on ships made their way to the Everglades. And of course, whatever the early European settlers had with them, you know, livestock, whatever, they would have escaped inevitably.
Mm-hmm.
Or be let go just for
or
the
shipwreck.
Heck of it. A shipwreck, yeah. So, lots of stuff. Going back to that pet trade, though, In more modern times, you've got hydrilia. That's a plant used in fish tanks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm done with the fish. The fish died. Let's just go dump the rest of this tank into the Everglades. That'll be great for it. That'll be good for the Everglades.
I can only seeing that making sense if you're, the Everglades are your literal backyard.
Right.
I'm not going to drive plants to be free somewhere that it might like.
Maybe, I guess there's enough people just
adjacent.
Everglade adjacent. They could just open up their back fence and go do it. Because it is a problem.
Right.
Also, lionfish from residential fish tanks.
Yeah. And those are a big problem in coral reefs, too, right?
Really?
Lionfish? Yeah.
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 Wait, so how did they get there? Was it they like swam from the Everglades over to these reefs, or?
I don't know if it's specifically in South Florida, but I know lionfish are a big problem because they are invasive and they kind of dominate and they're super aggressive.
Okay.
And yeah, there's basically a standing kill order to where if you see a lionfish, you need to kill it. There might be even a bounty system on them. If you go collect them.
If you don't kill it, is there a repercussion for you if they were like
I don't know, Melissa, do you like a good healthy coral ecosystem?
I do, big fan of that.
Then yeah, there is a pretty big repercussion.
In addition to the lionfish, we've got iguanas. That's a big one, notably green iguanas. Those are pretty popular pet.
Mm-hmm.
You've got tegu lizards, veiled chameleons, and Cuban.
What was that again?
Veiled chameleons.
Okay.
And Cuban tree frogs. I'm really struggling today. I don't understand. Didn't you say that you had an iguana?
I did have an iguana.
And you wasn't a good experience for you? Did you set it free when you got sick of it?
No, he escaped.
Oh.
And we found him in my brother's waterbed.
In his waterbed?
Well, if you've ever been in a waterbed, which I doubt a lot. Well, I don't know.
We all had a friend who had, her parents had a waterbed.
If you were a certain age, you may have more waterbed experience than others. But there's a zone in the waterbed towards the edges where if your arm or anything gets
yes.
there, it gets sucked into the waterbed. And
into the crack.
Into the crack.
Okay.
And that's where the iguana was found. He liked it because it was warm. That's where he was.
Did he get squished? Was he alive?
He was alive. And then he died.
When?
I don't know exactly. Sometime after that.
Okay.
Maybe soon after that from waterbed exposure. And then I buried it in the backyard. And then about an hour later, our dog unburied it. To come and showed me.
Dramatic.
Brought it to me and said, hey, you forgot this lizard.
Doing you a
and
solid.
And that's what I remember the most.
That I'm speechless. That is a big experience for you to have at a young age. Wow. That'll ruin
this is gross
iguanas
mostly,
for I you. Yeah.
I thought I wanted one, but it was just gross when I got it. I was like, ugh. Flaking off, and
yeah,
I didn't like it's the way its toes looked. That was a design oriented kid, it didn't fit my design
right.
aesthetic.
I think it's good if you had a friend who had one.
I would love that,
and that was enough, but you didn't have to really spend enough time with it to get into the toe cracks.
Also, when they're young like that, they just look like a lizard, they don't start looking like you know the iguana you might see at a Margaritaville t shirt.
Yeah.
Until they're like very mature. And that was what I liked. I liked those iguanas.
Oh, okay. Well, it's crazy that you could have contributed, and you're just one of millions of kids who has probably contributed to this problem.
Well, I didn't. It died.
It was close, though. And I don't think you would have batted an eye.
If he ran away.
If he had ran away, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so the main cause of the mayhem, though, of the invasive species, so like in the Everglades, you've got all those lizards and chameleons and tree frogs and lionfish, but the biggest one is the Burmese python. Originally from Southeast Asia, it has established a strong breeding population down in the Everglades.
Strong.
Just got a grip on it down there. In the 20th century, the demand for exotic pets will steadily increase. I mean, it has been historically. We talk about it all the time. Like, people want birds from exotic places and all that. We've been doing it forever.
Yeah, your dad's got stories about this.
Right. He had an ocelot and they had a sloth.
In Miami.
Yeah, in Miami.
He forged, or he had business cards made up that said he was an exotic animal dealer. And used those to somehow purchase an ocelot and a sloth.
Honestly, he probably didn't even need to forge documents to do that. It seems like they're not really checking any references down in Florida.
And all I remember about that story is they both ended up being set free. How you set free a sloth is...
I think, didn't he say that they had found it, it was on a wire?
After they let it go, it ended up on a telephone wire or
something. A long time after that.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it surviving that long without food. I mean, what's it eating?
I don't know what sloths eat.
Grass? Fruit and stuff?
Moss? I don't know. Bugs?
Yeah. Yeah, all that stuff. But you're in a residential neighborhood.
It's Miami. Probably all that stuff just hanging around.
Yeah, I mean, he must have been Everglades adjacent.
Yeah.
But Florida is the place for this. It's because most of these animals are coming through Miami. It's the main hub for the importation of exotic animals for the United States. And they have less strict laws there. Lots more exotic animals can be kept as pets in Florida. So... we start seeing the Burmese pythons in Florida around the 1930s. By the 1990s in the Everglades, it's game on.
It's in full swing.
Yeah. They've established themselves and they notice.
They've got a foothold in the ecosystem.
Yeah, they're large and in charge down there. And we're not just getting pythons in Florida, you know, we're sending them to other parts once they get to Miami. There was like a 10-year period from 1996 to 2006 where they estimate around 99,000 pythons being imported as pets.
Ooh.
It's a bit much. Why? There's a lot of people trying to...
I'm just imagining 99,000 buyers and they're all the same guy. The same type of guy.
Yeah.
You know, with like cut off sleeves and like the bad boy club tattoo and all got the same sunglasses from the same truck stop.
What do they do for a living, that guy?
Not like an office job, but a regular type job. And then this is their like bad boy side.
Where do you house a Burmese python?
You got a big old tank.
That is a massive tank.
Well, they start off small.
I'm not even going to tell you how big they get yet.
Hey, I have a story.
Yeah?
When I was a kid.
A snake story?
I come outside of my home, my childhood home. And there's a big-ass python.
What?
Anaconda type.
No.
Must have been 8 feet.
Oh, my God.
Taking a sip of water out of the gutter.
Oh.
And I was like, what the hell? I didn't say that because it was eight. I probably said, oh my gosh.
Some eight-year-olds think language.
I was a good boy.
Okay.
And I ran to get help, and it turned out it was the neighbor's pet, and it had escaped.
It was a real python. It wasn't a misidentification.
I mean, I can't say if it was a python or something else, right. But it was the big boys.
Because typically, you grew up in Southern California, you're going to see a rattlesnake. That's something you will see living here. That's common, and they're terribly deadly.
I have another python story.
Okay.
At Art Center, Calls of Design, word it, advertising courses. I partnered with a photographer to do these photo shoots for the Petzl headlamps.
Yeah.
That they use for go hiking and stuff. So we were doing this photo shoot where, because it was hands-free flashlight. So the photo shoot was like a guy and he's like being constricted by a python, but his headlight's still on, on his headlamp.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's shoot this. So we rented a python.
What?
And I was the model. And I had to sit there as the guy, the like handler, wrapped it around, put it in the constrictor position, and they took photos of me.
I wish everybody could see my eyes right now, my face in general.
It was a little weird because I'm like, this is like their death position. it's like put your head in a lion's mouth. But you had to be cool.
How did he was just trained to go into that position and be like, ha-ha?
Like we did, it was like one loop around, maybe one and a half. And then, you know, through photo editing, we added like more loops.
Okay, so he like draped him around.
Yeah, yeah. But it was like around my neck.
Where was his head?
And shoulders. Like right next to my face.
Okay. First of all, I've seen this thing that you're talking about.
Uh-huh.
At the art center thing.
That was real.
That's blowing my mind. Because I'll tell you one reason that I like didn't talk to you for a while when we went to art center was because of that.
Because of snakes?
That snake. I was like, ew. I associated you with that.
You thought I was a snake guy. Like this was my
you
pet
just
snake.
You were tarnished a little bit because I'm so fearful of them. I'm serious. It was to the point I couldn't even look at that. And you're like, I'm just now learning it was for a hands-free light. Like, I didn't even know what that ad was for because I was so turned off by it. Oh my gosh. I didn't know that was a real snake.
Yeah.
So how long? Do you know how long that snake was?
It was big. I don't know. 10, 12 feet. It was huge.
Did they feed it right before they gave it to you?
No, he's like, oh, this guy, careful, this guy's real hungry. I don't know.
When his head was by yours, did you say, yeah, he could open his jaw big enough to get around my body?
I think I remember saying those words. Yes. No. He didn't seem big enough. If he was going to do something, I was going to bonk him on the head. You know, I was prepared.
I guess there was two people there, but it could be like that video where the people just stood beside and let it happen. Do you still have that photo?
I don't know where it is. I think my mom has it.
You should burn it. That's, oh my gosh. Let's get back to it here. But here's the thing about Florida. We've got 99,000 snakes from 1996 to 2006 in America. A lot of those are in Florida. And as you were telling us, you've seen firsthand that they escape pretty easy.
Yeah.
They're not, it's quite easy to lose track of your giant snake, apparently. Like, you release one of those in New York City, it makes its way out. It's not going to make it through the winter.
No. It'll go down to the subway system. People will throw it some change, thinking it's part of some type of, you know, sideshow. But it ain't making it
even
long.
Down there. Yeah, it's even in the subway, it finds a nice little pocket. I don't know if you're going to survive down there. It's cold. In Florida, different. It's hot. It's wet. And it's got a ton of stuff down there for the snakes to eat. They could probably just survive on escaped pets, other kind of pets alone.
Yeah.
Ocelots, you know. Iguanas, whatever, and they eat everything. So you don't have a bunch of Burmese pythons going out into the wild and creating this like huge colony elsewhere. It's the Everglades.
The conditions are right for them to thrive.
They're proliferating down there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can find these Burmese pythons or berms, as the locals call them, elsewhere in Florida. But they really do love the Everglades National Park. They breed in mass numbers, and they prey mainly on mammals, but they'll eat anything. Then they estimate there's around 15,000 actively breeding, but the number is really hard to pin down. It's really hard to estimate.
Yeah, they're always slithering through the water. You can't tell how many there are.
Yeah, you can't get a good head count. They hunt by smell, and they don't really move around a lot. They're not slithering all over the place, really. They're ambush hunters. Mm. So they like to wait around until they catch a scent of a prey, and they follow the scent, and then they hide nearby until they can attack. They squeeze them to death, and then they swallow them whole.
Is it, so an attack, is that like very quiet, slithery, or is it like jump, bite, corkscrew around, get them?
That's what I'm thinking.
Okay.
I won't look up a video of that. So if you want to do that, go ahead. I don't think you can slither around slowly like a prey animal. My mom told me a story, though, that, I don't know, friend or family member had a kid somewhere in the South. And the kids were in the backyard and they were doing dishes, looking out the back window at their kids. And they looked out and there was a boa constrictor, something.
On one of the
wrapping
kids?
Wrapping themselves around the kid.
Oh my God.
I don't know if it's a true story.
He just come out and slice off his head.
I would destroy that python. I would not be scared of that in that moment. But
I've got a machete. I would grab it and then I'd machete chop. One swipe.
I'm in the kitchen. There's lots of knives in there. I'm just taking every knife I have.
I mean, that's more of a stabby knife. I'm one that's going to...
At this point, I've got strength. I'm going to rip the snake apart. I just put my fingers into the snake and rip it apart. That's how mm-hmm. I go into...
You're going
to
go up through the other end and right, rip I'm it all apart about... all the way through.
Okay, but I bring it up because you could... You have a baby or a toddler or something. They're not learned enough. They don't know what this creature is. They might not sense it to be danger. And yeah, mm-hmm. perhaps you could get away with that. If you are an animal that lives in the Everglades, I don't think you're just going to idly sit while a snake just wraps itself around you. Right. I think there is probably an attack to it where it grabs you. And then, yeah, just... coils up as fast as it can. It's terrifying. Yeah. Why are we talking about this?
You brought it up.
Oh, they eat a lot and have pretty much wiped out. Here's the extinction part, right?
Okay.
Raccoons, possums, bobcats, native marsh rabbits, frogs, birds, other snakes, and even alligators. They haven't wiped all of those out, but...
they put a huge dent.
Yeah, so since their arrival or their boom in the 90s, there's been a 99% decrease in raccoons and possums and a complete removal of rabbits.
Wow.
A while back, there was an attempt to reestablish the marsh rabbits in the Everglades, and the pythons killed all of them in an 11-month time span.
They're like, thanks for the buffet.
Thanks. Let's try this again. Yeah, we were missing those rabbits. They're easy to get.
Yeah, it's like literally being at a buffet and everyone's like, they just put out crab legs.
Right. Those must be tasty. They're gone. I'm pretty sure the rabbits are gone and the possums and raccoons are nearly there. People in that area have said that you don't see those animals anymore.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So that's a real-time extinction
for the Everglades. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder what kind of butterfly effect that has.
Oh, sure.
What were the rabbits and possums and raccoons keeping in line that are now flourishing?
I don't know.
Garbage mostly.
We're going to talk about it in a minute, but beyond just the
garbage
pythons,
cans are going.
Yeah, they're not falling over, right? Yeah, they're not
at historic rates.
I'm sure it's having an effect, but you know, so non-discriminant. Like, they have found 76 types of prey inside of pythons. Different types. 76. So they're eating everything. It's quite remarkable that we've waited this long to talk about it. Do they kill humans?
Well, that was the first thing you brought up.
Well, but we never really said that was a fake video.
Uh-huh.
We weren't talking about if you encounter one of these.
Well, you also told me another story where it was constricting itself around a small child.
Which I said, I don't know if that was a real story or not.
I'm going to say yes, if they're small enough. If they can eat a feral pig, which I know they can.
Yeah.
They can eat a toddler.
Okay, yeah. Now, I don't put it past some of the people in Florida to set their toddlers free in the Everglades should they tire of them. But I don't think that's a common thing.
Not common, but it wasn't that long. It was only a few years ago in Disneyland, Florida, that a 2-year-old was eaten.
What?
By a gator.
In Disneyland, Florida?
Well, around there, like Orlando.
Sorry, I mean, like Epcot or whatever?
I don't know, at the Epcot Center, but it was like a trip to go see Disneyland.
Oh, and a toddler got eaten.
Yeah. Just because if you're down there, you know, like any standing water, you should assume there's a gator.
Right. Just don't get anywhere near that.
Yeah. And so kid was playing near the water. Gone.
No.
Yeah. It's devastating.
That is devastating. Wow. That's terrible. There have been no human deaths from wild living Burmese pythons in Florida.
That's good. Good stat. I like that. Let's keep it up.
I'm stoked about that. The risk of attack is very low. And I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why. I guess it is hard to swallow a human. Yeah. I look at you versus me. I don't think it'd be that hard to swallow me.
That's why I was like, well, it seems like an irrational fear, but is it?
I know. I think I'm still going to keep the fear, you know? I mean, I'm not going to let that down yet. Let go of that.
Mm-hmm.
The balance of the ecosystem in the Everglades is super whacked up, and that's on top of what humans have already done to the area. I believe there's only 25% of the original Everglades still remaining since we started being there.
Mm-hmm.
Population growth, agriculture, pollution, water diversion, flood control, that's all done a real number on the area. And that's mostly through what's called terraforming,
mm-hmm.
which is just the large scale reengineering of the land.
Yeah. Try and drain out the water, backfill it with some dirt,
yeah,
and put some trachomes on it.
Well, you do whatever. You're diverting water in some way to do whatever you want. They'll even do things like replace entire mangrove forests mm-hmm. with palm trees.
Mm.
Just because they want to look that. Yeah.
Whereas mangroves serve like a super important role in the ecosystem, and palm trees are basically just big grass.
Right.
Worthless.
Yeah. Without mangroves, there's no Everglades.
Yeah.
So the terraforming really ramped up in the 40s or the 50s around there. So in a relatively short period of time, quite a bit of damage has been done. I believe some attempts are being made to reverse this damage, but it's one of those things that, like, they keep talking about it. They get some federal money behind it. But I don't know if there's really a lot of progress happening. I couldn't find a whole lot of info recently that said, like, hey, we're doing great.
Yeah. Probably not their number one focus down there.
No. Okay, I got some more exciting stuff for you. So we know some of the original pythons in the Everglades were escaped or released pets, but we actually believe there was another reason the population started rapidly growing in the 1990s.
I'm trying to think if there was some movie or something that might have popularized them. There was like a talking snake. you know, the Beethoven effect or the 101 Dalmatians. Each of those was followed by a boom in that particular. And I'm coming up with nothing.
Nothing. You don't have no guess.
No.
Okay. It's not film related. It was a natural event. It was Hurricane Andrew in 1992. This was a Category 5 storm, and it destroyed a python breeding facility.
Ooh.
Which, in general, just seems a little unnecessary. Like, why do we have a python breeding facility? I guess people want those snakes.
Yeah.
All those snakes escaped into the surrounding swamps. And that's really, they think that's really what ignited Snake City down there.
Yeah.
I was skeptical. I was like, no, let's point the finger at all the snake, irresponsible snake owners.
Mm-hmm.
But they did DNA or genetic studies of a lot of the snakes down there. And there's not a wide array of genetic diversity, meaning that this theory, there is some grounding to it, that
they probably came from a handful of
snakes at the breeding facility.
Ground zero snakes.
Yeah. Yes. So that's fascinating to me. I mean, I'm sure given enough time, just enough pet snakes happening, that they still would have gotten to the numbers they were today. But it was just that one natural event that took out that facility that started this whole thing.
So think about that next time there's a threat of a hurricane.
Right. You batten down those hatches in your breeding facility. Move them, maybe. You know what? There's snakes in your childhood neighborhood. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think even a hurricane is necessary to break all those snakes out. They were probably leaving on their own free will well before the hurricane hit.
Yeah.
Okay, so in 2021, the python was actually put on Florida's prohibited species list, which means it's illegal to buy, sell, or transport Burmese pythons. And if you do currently own one as a pet, you have to get them registered and microchipped. So that's nice. If you really are obsessed with them, get a microchip, just like a dog. But you know it's got to be bad for Florida to make something illegal. That's
something, yeah, with snakes too. Well, I'm glad there's that step. That's good.
Okay. Yeah. I'm getting into the point of the show where we're going to talk about like stuff we're doing to combat the snakes.
Well, hit me.
One solution is to try and remove as many individuals of the invasive species as possible.
Is this not a Discovery show already? Snake hunters?
It is. And then if you recall, like I think in the 2012s when maybe it was the inaugural snake hunt or something, but that's when we all learned that there was pythons in the Everglades and it was a big deal for a month or something.
So is there like a bounty system?
There is.
Okay.
There is a bounty system in place and it's still in place. It started as just a trial program, a 3-month trial pilot program. But they just still do it. It's been over 8 years, probably longer.
And they just bring in the snakes.
Okay, so there's actually 50 full-time people doing it. I think they work for the Wildlife Service. And that's their job.
That makes more sense, because otherwise you're in... We've talked about this in other bounty systems.
Yeah.
Where it just sets up this side job of breeding snakes to turn in for a bounty.
Oh, no. Okay, yeah.
So you have to have people who are, that's their sole job.
Okay, I hadn't even thought about that. Yes, they probably don't just let any resident come in with a snake and get the bounty. You have to be qualified through their system to do it. Correct. But they do open it up every year for regular people. Like anybody can come to do it, and they have this thing called what is it called?
Whacking Day. That's a Simpsons reference.
Whacking Day. It's called the Florida Python Challenge, and that's a 10-day competition. It's hosted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission, and the public's invited to compete for a prize. Last I heard, it was $30,000. And that's given to whoever catches the longest python.
Wow.
Historically, it actually doesn't result in a lot of kills, though. There around 1,000 people participate, and the killed python numbers have ranged from 68 to 209.
Wow.
So they're hard to find. They're not easy to find.
No. I would have thought there would be a lot more, but I guess it's not that effective.
It's more to make awareness of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
People, it reminds everybody, oh yeah, we've got these invasive species, you know, and they get into a frenzy about it. They've also got other things like that for other species that are what they call like invasive species rodeos.
Mm-hmm.
There's the iguana rodeo where you compete to take the most pictures of invasive iguanas, tegus, and chameleons, and you report their location. So you're not killing them in that.
Okay. But you're helping them out by giving them locations.
Right.
All right.
And the professionals come in. There's also the weed wrangle.
The what now?
The weed wrangle.
This is called gardening, but
it is. It's not as exciting. That's just you take out as many invasive weeds around your property as you can. All right. We jumped around a little bit. So they've got the bounty hunters. And quite recently, actually, there was some news about one of them. It was an article, a BBC article, where this woman who does make a living doing this, she talks about her experience. And when they look for these Burmese pythons, of course, they'll hunt any size, but the ultimate prize would be a 20-footer.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like the holy grail.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think anybody's ever actually found a 20-footer, which is around 6 meters long. I believe like the biggest ones are 18, a little over 18.
You see some of those videos on the internet sometimes in like the Amazon.
Yeah.
Where the snakes just keep going on and on. Like they basically never leave a river because they're too big.
Oh.
And they need to have like some type of flotation just to get around.
What happened if they leave the river?
Well, it's just they're way, way slower because they're so big.
Okay. So there's just a 20-foot long snake hauling it in a river.
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. So in the winter, she and others hunt during the day, but in the summer it's just too hot, so they hunt these pythons at night. What a nightmare job. Why are you going into this? Why are you doing this?
I think you got to be raised in the swamp to go out and do this stuff. No, I'm not doing that. Nope.
Come home like, hey, I guess, guys, I quit college. I decided I'm going to hunt Burmese pythons in the dead of night.
Have you ever seen noodling?
Noodling?
Yeah.
Wait, what's that?
It's where you hunt for like catfish, but with your bare hands.
Oh, wow. Dang.
You're like, oh, there's a spot a big catfish might be burrowed in the mud, and you like put your hand down there and try and make it look like a worm, and then they like chomp onto your arm and you bring them up, and you're like, oh, I got one.
They bite your fingers.
Yeah.
And
they bite your whole arm. You like shove your whole arm into it. And they're like huge. They're like 4-foot giant catfish.
Oh, wow.
It's called noodling.
Noodling.
And yeah, I think it's at night. It's the same thing. It's like none of this I would ever do.
No. But you would stick your hand into a tank at SeaWorld.
Yes, I did do that. And it was the bravest thing.
So I don't know. Maybe you would. So we talked about the snakes being hard to locate. Pythons, they actually camouflage really well in the Everglades. They're also nocturnal. Most of the time, we talked about they're just not moving. That's over 80% of their time is spent just still.
Mm-hmm.
They could be hiding underground or underwater. So unless you see one moving or crossing a road, that's usually, you know, when they see a crossing road or see a little bit of it, that's when they go for it. That's when they move in.
Yeah.
You can't really hunt those larger snakes by yourself. You need at least two people. One person has to tape the mouth shut while the other one wrestles it.
Uh-huh. I don't know which job I would want. Oh my God. Both seem pretty not great.
No, I don't want either one of those jobs. I don't even need to pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe I'll think about that. And maybe give me some time. We'll end with that. Once contained, they kill the python with a bolt gun, which is apparently a humane way to euthanize them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's not the easiest part of the whole process for a lot of the bounty hunters, at least the one interviewed. You know, it's a little tough.
Yeah.
You are, you know, euthanizing a living thing that you must like because you've decided that this is what you're going to do.
Right.
Or you hate it and it's very fulfilling in that moment. I don't know. The payout varies by the size of the snake. And if you locate an active nest, that'll earn you a little bonus.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's a modern day bounty system. And we're not even sure that it's putting a dent in the population.
Well, it's doing something. So hats off to them.
Maybe. You know, the problem is they're so good at concealing themselves, we don't really have an accurate number of the current population. A while back, at one point, there was an estimate it could be 300,000, but that's probably a stretch. So they are trying other tactics now. One is planting Burmese pythons with microchips,
mm-hmm.
and then they track those back to the mating grounds where they can terminate the females.
Good idea.
And that's, of course, so they don't breed.
Mm-hmm.
They're also trying to use special infrared cameras that have AI. And the hope there is that one day, presumably, the AI will be smart enough to detect a Burmese python from the other animals around there. But that's like way off.
Right.
I don't have a lot of hope for that either.
And then what happens when they detect it is like shoot a dart.
I know. Like, we saw one here. I guess maybe if they don't move a lot, the next day you go to that area and search around.
Do some noodling.
Do something. I'm not going to noodle around for a Burmese python. Oh my God. So some of the bounty hunters have taken the skins from the kills and used those to make accessories and make a little side hustle with that. But eating them is not advisable because they have dangerously high levels of mercury, like all of the top predators in that area, because of bioaccumulation, which is the gradual accumulation of things like pesticides.
Hmm.
Not okay. Good. Yeah. Pretty toxic down there.
Okay. Gross.
Some of the less dramatic ways they've also tried to catch pythons are with trained dogs. Also, they will put tracking collars on the prey animals, knowing that the Burmese pythons are going to eat them. And then once they eat them, they just track the collar from inside the python.
Yeah. If it's effective.
Oh, my God. I'm shaking my head. Tell me how proud you are of me again for doing
this. It must have been very tough. So brave.
The last thing, they're considering using something called biocontrol. This is a future technology.
Uh-huh.
This is a virus, a parasite, or a bacterium that selectively targets a species. So, and then whatever effect that has, maybe it shortens the lifespan or kills them. I don't know.
Makes them too ugly to reproduce.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But that could really mess things up if... you know, it's not having the intended effect on the pythons.
Yeah, or it creates a mutant super breed of pythons. Resistant to... makes them sprout legs. And
oh, my God. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, then what if it makes alligators ugly and then, you know, nobody wants to mate with them and then you have a problem... there and
makes the alligators' legs fall off and then they turn into python legs.
So they haven't tried biocontrol yet.
Wait till you really get that one down good before you try that.
Yeah. And I don't know how you figure out that you got it. Anyway, and now we come to the part of the show. Like, already I think you should just acknowledge how much action and drama there's been in this story.
Yeah.
Okay. But now it's going to get real nuts. So what happens if the python population keeps growing and the climate continues to get warmer?
They get bigger?
They could get bigger, maybe. But really, that opens their range up beyond Florida. Those warmer regions in the U.S.
They start skittering northward.
Yeah. North and east and west, all over.
You don't got to worry in California.
Well, like...
they're not crossing the desert.
It's a far-fetched scenario, but there has been an estimate that by the end of the century, these snakes could expand their range to include as much as a third of the United States, including the coasts. But, okay, this is sort of like a worst-case scenario prediction. And highly unlikely, but it did cause quite a bit of concern in my
for me.
Yes. And but yes, the main deterrent for these snakes is the cold. In the past, when there have been cold snaps, most of them die. The Everglades will periodically have cold snaps. The most recent one was in 2010. So presumably there was a little uptick in python deaths after that. But some of the pythons go underground into animal burrows and they stay there until it warms up. And think about this over time. The snakes who aren't clever enough to go underground, they die. The snakes that go underground and survive, that instinct.
They reproduce.
They survive and they seek shelter. And that's an inheritable trait, or could be, that is passed down. So they're getting smarter. And eventually you have this just souped up snake that's adapted to tolerate and survive in colder weather.
And then, yeah, range expands.
Uh-huh.
So if you love a raccoon, you know, give one a hug today because they might not be around that much longer.
And nobody loves possums, so we just don't.
Possums get a bad rep. That's just because they're gross and ugly and make weird noises. Nobody wants to touch them.
So just give it a little wave.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going?
Fist bump from across the room.
Good luck out there. Watch out for those pythons. But the evidence so far in Florida has shown that even though the pythons are invading northward into other parts of Florida, their numbers aren't expanding that much because they tend to not like those urban areas. So, you know, once they get closer to the coasts and the bigger cities that I'd like to inhabit, I guess I don't have to worry too much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, obviously when I read that, I freaked out a little bit. And this is why I'm now getting TikTok videos about...
the algorithm's got you figured out.
Yeah. Anyway...
so they blow up in population. They start wiping out all the small mammals and anything down there in the Everglades, extincting them effectively in that region.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not stopping there. Their range is growing.
Yeah.
So watch out, animals.
Yeah.
You're going to get eaten.
And if you think about the longer game, right? Like, we're causing climate change, but there's been periods of ice ages and heat waves that have gone heat waves that's not the right term, but like, there will be a time in the Earth's future where it gets really hot. We'll all be dead, but and then that's when those pythons might
remember the Earth. Yeah.
Titanoboa.
Yeah, we talked about
it. What was that? Was it like 50 feet, 70 feet long or something?
I don't remember the details, but similar thing.
That's it. They're taking out a lot of species, these pythons. It's not their fault, though. We brought them there.
And they're not stopping anytime soon.
There might be hope. 2021, since they put that legislation in that you can't get any more of these snakes. Perhaps that in time, give it a few years, and we still got those bounty hunters out there, maybe we will finally dig into the numbers. It's amazing that it took that long for them to put the legislation into place, right? When we knew this in the 90s. It looks like the rabbits didn't make it. At least locally, they've been extincted there. And who knows? Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, thank you, Melissa. I know this was a real tough one for you.
Yeah.
Brought up a lot of emotions, and I hope you feel stronger because of it.
I thought about what side of the snake I'm going to do. I'm going to do the head. I'm going to tape the head.
Probably a good choice, because it could easily constrict you and crush you.
Oh, could easily overpower me. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the whole thing. I don't want that thing flailing around. And then who knows, the person in the front might like accidentally lose the head and it comes back and gets me. And then I have more control in the front.
Yeah. Okay, so you take the head.
Yeah, what about
you? I'll wrestle the body. And okay. When I'm wrestling, I'm getting cheap shots in there. I'm punching them. I'm punching the ribs.
Okay.
I'm poking. I've got a stick or something, you know. I'm really agitating him. Working him over.
I don't know if that's humane. Like,
we're in a fist fight. What do you want me to do? Huh? Is he going to ring the bell and we're going to go to our corners? Yeah.
I wonder if you could just do the bolt gun quickly, you know? Like, how long is this whole process?
Well, it depends on how long it takes you to snap his mouth shut.
It's a hypothetical situation.
Until then, it's me and this anaconda one-on-one. Pop, 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 pop. He's getting rib shot. Elbows. Drop knees.
Just imagine a snake that big. That's as big as the room we're in. 18 feet.
I could take it.
Gosh, man. All right. Well, thanks for doing this episode with me, Jack. It was a lot of fun. I don't know what else to say.
Bye.
Okay, see you next time. Bye. Did you ever feel so bad inside? A Peg Leg Deer production.